we all practice kissing on our Tiger Beat centerfold posters, yeah, right? If it was true. Like a, and without those, like without that? Tiger Beat, we wouldn't know how to kiss.
That's right.
Hello world, is a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of love, and it's what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who started manifesting early by wallpapering their rooms with 8.5 by 11 inch pages torn from their favorite magazines.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving Gen X's number one news source, Tiger Beat Magazine, in an interview with actual Tiger Beat editor Ann Moses, author of the book, Meow, My Groovy Life with Tiger Beat's Teen Idols.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
If you could name one magazine from your Gen X youth that captured your heart, it would likely be Tiger Beat. This photo-filled love fest is where our first crushes bloomed and prospered, helping us cover our walls and possibly even teaching us how to kiss. Just, we'll ask Michelle about that later. And today's episode features an interview with one of the people responsible for curating those photos and writing those stories that fed our preteen fantasies. Ann Moses was just 19 years old when she started at Tiger Beat Magazine in 1966. And to this day, she cherishes the work that she did on our behalf. She was up close and personal with the biggest crushes of the late 60s and early 70s, and she has the stories to prove it.
Boy, does she.
Well, it's every teenager's from the 1970s dream job.
Like, oh, my God.
But also yes. The type of job that would scare the pants off me, right? Because, right. Like, and actually, she has some stories about that, about right? People with no pants. But can you, like, it's almost too good to be true. Like, she got to live out all of our fantasies.
It's a job you almost couldn't conceive of when you were a kid. You were like, somebody does this? Like, somebody talks to my first boyfriend as a job? Like, that's their job. If I had known that was a job, I would have written that on my third grade. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? A Tiger Beat editor. That's what I would have done.
Oh, my God.
Well, she was really, like, at the right place at the right time in so many aspects of her career and her relationship with Tiger Beat. Because Tiger Beat actually launched in September of 1965, along with one other world-changing event, and that would be when Carolyn Cox was born.
Aww. insert like an angel chorus right there.
So Tiger Beat was the brainchild of Charles Laufer, and he was a journalism and English teacher out of all places, you guys, Beverly Hills High School.
Right.
How fun would that be?
Yeah. Right.
And you know what? He saw this publication not only as a way to make money, but also as a way to encourage reading and acknowledging the interests of teen girls, which largely that had been a group that had been ignored by media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find that so interesting that as much as this became an entrepreneurial juggernaut, there were some real benevolent reasons for its beginning. And the fact that he was trying to honor the feelings of young girls, that's astounding. First of all, that it was a man who did that. It was hard enough for an adult to do that. But for a man to figure out that, well, that must have come from him teaching high school, right?
Oh,
that he could see what was happening and that people just turn the other way and pretend that they're cuckoo beans.
Right.
And it's almost shocking that no one had thought of that before.
Agreed.
Because it makes so much sense. It's like, oh, duh. You know, like, duh. Right. I think that I'm shocked, especially there were, you know, fan magazines, I think, in the 50s and 60s, but not really marketed to girls like Tiger Beat was.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the columns, the giveaways, the posters. I mean, the posters. Tiger Beat did not stay assembled, basically. you know, I mean, it was made to be taken apart and staples very strategically removed and, mm-hmm. you know, the giveaways and the cutouts and the entry forms and mm-hmm. sending in money for fan clubs. They really kind of hit on all the things that a young girl, teen girl would have enjoyed about a magazine like that.
And that's exactly how they differentiated themselves. Right out of the gate, Tiger Beat was different because it wasn't a movie magazine. It wasn't a gossip magazine. It wasn't a tell-all. Instead, it tapped into what teen readers really wanted, and that was photos. Photos of their crushes mm-hmm. and the opportunity to feel close to them. We cannot emphasize enough the importance of the photos. We know these photos. They were plastered all over our walls. And you'll hear Michelle comment later on why these photos may have been shot in the way that they were. Full page, full face shots that were perfect yeah. for perhaps kissing.
Yes.
We'll yeah. talk about that later. Yeah.
yeah. Well, so you need their head to be kind of life size.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. It can't be like the size of
marketing.
Yeah, it can't be like the size of a Ken doll. Did you guys ever try kissing your Ken doll? Wait, oh. no. Who? What?
No.
Asking for a friend.
Okay. Yeah, it has to literally, like, the lips on the page have to be the same size as your lips. It's just, yes. I'm surprised they didn't have, like, a developmental psychologist on staff to figure all of this out. It's just so brilliant. So Tiger Beat's only real competition at the time when it started was 16 magazine. But Tiger Beat would differentiate in lots of ways. 16 featured famous people too, but they were often focused on jokes and entertaining the reader. It sounds to me kind of like it was an adult's idea of what kids like, but Tiger Beat was focused on love. And like Carolyn said before, teen love, your first crush, mm-hmm. as if somebody was for the first time taking the feelings of teenagers seriously. Also, 16 was based in New York, but Tiger Beat was based in Hollywood, where the stars were. And they made this clear to readers with lots and lots of photos of, like, see, here we are on the set of the Monkees, and see, here's our columnist, Ann mm-hmm. Moses, with David Cassidy. Tiger Beat wasn't just reporting on the stars. They were friends with the stars, and this made readers trust them. Tiger Beat also created a very specific style that spoke directly to teens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tiger Beat basically had its own lingo. And I think a lot of you listening will remember this as I start to tell you. This is all coming straight from Ann Moses's book, by the way. Because besides, listen to this, like besides exclamation points, which were basically as important as the posters. She mm-hmm. said, you know, one of the editors she thinks counted, you know, there was almost like a minimum requirement. Tiger Beat used fresh new terminology like this. A favorite was a fave. A photo was a pic, but two or more were pics, P-I-X. Love was always spelled L-U-V, and laugh was L-A-F-F.
Oh my God.
Guys were described as heavenly or out of sight. And if they were cool, they were gear. I don't remember that
gear.
One.
Gear.
I wonder if that was like late 60s, early 70s.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They had the stars sign almost every poster with things like peace and love, you know, Davy, mm-hmm. peace and love, David. I mean, this was the early 70s after all, yeah. right? That's right. Relatable. And the headlines were way more titillating than the actual story. And it was fine if they were even misleading. Like Anne says in her book that a headline like Bobby rushed to hospital might actually have been about how Bobby Sherman drove really fast to Cedar Sinai when he heard his sister had broken her ankle. Get it? Instead of Bobby, like we're a different meaning of the word rushed, right? Bobby right. rushed mm-hmm. to hospital. And they also had stock headlines like blank. So fill in the blank, maybe like David. David, why he's so special. And then maybe the next month it would be Davey. Why he's so special, or Mickey, yeah. why he's so special, Bobby. And
the template.
Telling tales on David. And then maybe a couple months later, it'd be telling tales on Donnie. So they used stock headlines. 10 reasons we love Scott. Mm-hmm. 10 reasons we love. And it was all just very sweet and innocent. A day in the
Always.
Life. Spend 24 hours yes. with Donnie. This is that very kind of sweet
crushing. So sweet, right. And yeah. Very innocent. And I think that was very astute of them. They figured out that what we wanted was the good boy, the sweet boy. And a lot of the headlines would be, I have a whole stack actually of Tiger Beat magazines here from the Ann Moses era. And there's one headline here that, and this is one that is part of a template too. Mickey's favorite person. And you're like, oh no, is it a girlfriend? Is it somebody he's going to marry? Is it somebody he fell in love with? No, it's his grandma.
Yeah.
He loves it. It's his favorite person. He goes to grandma when he has problems and she helps him out. And that makes us both be relieved and also go, oh.
Or Mickey. Can you guys remember the ones that would say like the girl that stole Donnie, that stole, you know, Scott's heart or Donnie. And it would be like a puppy. It'd be like a new female little puppy.
Always a puppy. Mm-hmm. And you guys, I used this. It's so funny. I learned from Tiger Beat without really even knowing it. And in Worldwide Crush, there is a place where I lead people on thinking that Rory Calhoun, the pop star in the book, has found a new love. Because he's talking about his new love and he's writing a new song for his new love and he's so excited. And you find out he's gotten a new puppy. It's
that's
right
very
out of Tiger Beat.
But it completely catered to us at that age and what we wanted from our crushes. We wanted to know their favorite color and what they would do on a date. They would bring you roses and they would take you for pizza and they love mini golf or they love going roller skating. This was what we craved. At least I know it's what I craved. No,
because we were young. Yeah.
Right.
This is what we wanted. Yeah. This is what we
weren't
wanted.
Ready for anything. More than that yet. And Tiger Beat was right there with us, providing that kind of information that fueled that for us.
It was honoring us.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they could see us and what we wanted, and they gave it to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And I loved finding out from Anne that, you know, those favorite colors or their favorite food, any of these things we wanted to know about our future partners, right? We're not just made up. Anne didn't just sit and make them up, or a publicist didn't just send this in. Like, there was some research. Like, Anne knew some people, whether it was firsthand experience, like she noticed it, or as we'll learn in this interview, she got to know family members of a lot of these celebrities, and they trusted her. And so all that stuff we were reading, it was real. I think she's probably responsible for the whole color purple and Donny Osmond thing. I mean, I think she noticed purple socks on him one time and then poof.
That's
socks
not a joke. With it. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is that she wasn't necessarily giving them a survey of, you know, what is your favorite soda? What is your favorite color? No, she's observing. He always wears purple socks. He always orders 7-Up whenever we're together. So it may have been presented in the magazine, like they've answered some questions. Anne wrote those, but she didn't write them out of thin air, right? Like she's using her powers of observation and her relationships with these people to answer those questions for them.
Right.
So how did Anne Moses become a writer for Tiger Beat in 1966 at only 19 years old? Whew. So she was a writer for her college newspaper, and she also worked as an usher at a local music venue. And one night, there was a new band performing called the Dave Clark Five. I'm feeling she was so overcome by their performance. She had never heard of them. They were brand new. So she thought, I want to interview them. I could say it's for my school newspaper. So she finagled her way backstage. Remember, she's just an usher. That's all. She's just an usher. She tells the manager she was on assignment for her school newspaper. Well, she wasn't. But lo and behold, the manager gathers the Dave Clark Five around, and they sat with her for an interview. And it was such a rush for her. She was like, this is what I want to do. So she starts writing more pieces on the performers who came to town. And not long after, a fellow writer said, you should really go talk to Chuck Lauffer at Tiger Beat. Tiger Beat was brand new. Anne had never heard of it. She was like, what is this Tiger Beat? But she got an interview with Chuck, and they promised her access to all of these stars that she loved to write about. And they were going to pay her. And they were going to pay her a lot. At one point, she said she was making more than her dad. It's crazy. This was like her dream come true. And it went the other way, too, for Tiger Beat, because Anne Moses became like Tiger Beat's secret sauce. Because remember, she's just 19 years old. So when these young tigers come to town, who do you think they want to hang out with? The fun 19-year-old college student or a 40-year-old reporter? right? So Tiger Beat.
It was brilliant.
Yes. It's so brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. She's getting access like crazy, and those celebs trusted Anne, and they shared with her in a way that they might not share with a 40-year-old reporter. So Anne herself becomes famous to the Tiger Beat readers because she's the one who's hanging out with the people that the readers are crushing on. She was featured in photos with them. She had her own column called Meow with Anne Moses. And this was all proof to the reader that Tiger Beat had the real info, because they did. And at the age of 21, Anne Moses was named editor of Tiger Beat magazine. She was the youngest editor of any magazine in the nation.
You go, Anne.
Amazing. I know.
I know. What were you doing at 21?
it's crazy. Well, and now, like we said earlier, Anne has written a compulsively readable book with all the juicy details of her time at Tiger Beat. Like, hold a napkin when you read, because the juice will drip out of your book. And it's called Meow, My Groovy Life with Tiger Beat's Teen Idols. And in it, Anne spills the tea on her time with the Monkees and Jefferson Airplane, David Cassidy, Bobby Sherman, the Bee Gees, Donny Osmond, Elvis Presley. Again, hold a napkin, you guys, because the tea is overflowing on these pages. Trust us. She tells us everything she couldn't tell us in the pages of Tiger Beat. And trust us when we say it is a rollicking good time.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
And guess what, listeners? You can join us at our next book club on October 8th. October 8th to hear some of these stories from Anne Moses herself. Definitely get the book before then so that you'll be ready with questions for Anne, who is already so excited to chat with all of you. You will hear in this upcoming episode, she is an absolute delight and loves to tell these stories. And we're going to have links to order Anne's book in the show notes, as well as in the Weekly Reader this Friday. And as always, all our supporters on Patreon attend our book club discussions for free. Non-patrons get in for only $5, which is the same price as joining Patreon at the superstar level. So I don't know why you wouldn't just do that. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm so excited for October 8th to have Anne be our special guest, because I'm thinking we might even get some stories we haven't heard. And again, you don't have to have read the book to be a part of our book club, but we highly encourage. When I say it's compulsively readable, it's like a sit down in one sitting type read, because you cannot stop. Yeah.
Right. And there are photos.
Lots of photos.
Yeah.
And there's one story in particular that you will hear in this interview that will absolutely knock your socks off. It's something that Anne has kept secret for almost 60 years, and she finally decided to share about it when she wrote her book. I'm still gobsmacked by the reveal, and you will not want to miss it. We'll ask her about it at the very end of our conversation here today. So please enjoy this trip down memory lane with this publishing pioneer, someone who laid the foundation for the decoration of all of our childhood bedrooms, Tiger Beat editor Anne Moses.
What number is this, Chip?
7A.
Okay, no, I mean, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
Oh, I could hide 'neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings.
The late 1960s was the advent of the Gen X era. Our first Gen Xers were born in 1965, including Carolyn, and it was in that same year that one of Gen X's most important cultural touchstones was born, the preteen holy grail known as Tiger Beat magazine. Joining us today is one of the pioneers who brought us Tiger Beat at the dawn of the Gen X era. Anne Moses was just a teenager herself, writing for her school newspaper when she got her first job with Tiger Beat. Not getting coffee or answering phones, but actually interviewing and photographing the hottest young stars of the day as a teenager. By the time she was 21 years old, she was named the youngest editor of a national magazine in the country. She was living everyone's teen dream, traveling the world interviewing the Monkees, David Cassidy, Bobby Sherman, the Bee Gees, the Osmonds, and even Elvis Presley. And she has the stories to prove it, which you can find in her book called Meow, My Groovy Life with Tiger Beat's Teen Idols. I kind of feel like we're in the presence of pop culture royalty right now. Anne Moses, it is with a truckload of gratitude and awe that we welcome you to the Pop Culture Preservation
Society.
Well,
thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to join you, ladies.
Thank you.
Yeah,
so
I'm covered
much.
In goosebumps.
I know.
Just because of how the importance you played behind the scenes in our lives. So yeah. Mm-hmm. This is an honor.
Well, likewise. And when I found out that people knew my name, knew what I used to do, and now on my socials, you don't know what it's like to have people comment that, oh, you made such an impression on when I was 10 years old. And, you know, I had a terrible home life. But when I read my Tiger Beat, I'd go to another world. I mean, the stories I've heard are just, it changed my life.
I have to say, too, one thing you said made me realize something. Ladies, and you might be responsible for many, well, for all of us and for many of our listeners learning how to kiss, because we all practice kissing on our Tiger Beat centerfold posters, right? If it was like a, and without those, without Tiger Beat, we wouldn't know how to kiss. Right.
I am so happy to hear that. You know,
I have a stack of Tiger Beats right here
cool.
that are all from the Anne Moses era. But you're right. They're those kissable
photos.
Oh, so photos.
Cute.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Those were.
Yep. You know, the publisher and editorial director, they were tuned in to a degree to what the audience wanted. They were like throwing things at the walls for those first few issues, because the only thing like it at the time was 16 Magazine. And that had a lot of cartoons in them and things like that. And it was only a matter of months before they understood that what they wanted were pictures and the latest news on them. They were putting all these little details in, like, you know, oh, the color of their hair, the way the sunlight made their eyes sparkle. It was different from my who, what, where, when, and why from right. my college right, newspaper, right. you know, the five W's of journalism.
Okay, so we're going to get to the meat of this book. So you say in this book, this is an actual quote, you say, the first faves, that's a Tiger Beat term, fave, there's lots of lingo that goes with the Tiger Beat style that you just talked about. You say in your book, the first faves featured in Tiger Beat may have been Sonny and Cher, Herman's Hermits, and the Righteous Brothers, but the Monkees put our magazine on the map.
Take the last train to Pottsville and I'll meet you at the station.
And the title of that chapter is actually Catching That Train to Clarksville, Meeting the Monkees, and Surviving Mike Nesmith. I love this. Can you tell us about the first time you met the Monkees on that last train to Clarksville?
It was, of course, a promotional thing put on by the radio station. You caught the train at Union Station in Los Angeles, which is a very historic building. And they had rented a car of the train, you know, passenger car. So then the contest winners, I was a member of the press, the contest winners, we all got out, walked down to the beach from the train tracks, and they had bleachers set up, and all of a sudden these helicopters come over. And the helicopters each dropped off one of the Monkees.
Oh my God.
So
oh my
that gosh. Was that was the first introduction, and it was really impressive. The crowd was going wild, so it was really cool. So then after they sang a couple songs there, then they got back on the train. They had drums and guitars set up in the back of a caboose, and the kids could go back and watch them more closely, and they did a couple songs, and then they just kind of went and mingled after that. Chuck Lauffer, Screen Gems had shown him
and
the pilot.
And Chuck Lauffer is the one who started Tiger Beat.
He was the publisher.
He's Tiger Beat.
Yes. And it was Lauffer Publishing. So he had seen the pilot, I had not, you know, I had no idea. And he immediately locked up the rights to produce Tiger Beat's official Monkeys Spectacular.
Their own magazine. The Monkeys got their own magazine.
Yes, their own magazine. Yeah. And also the Monkeys Write to You, which was a monthly column where they each write their thoughts. And basically, we wrote those. But it can't.
But this is the information we are here for.
Right.
Yeah. It was based on interviews, being out on the set with them. I mean, from our knowledge of them, we didn't just make it up out of the air.
You had exclusive access to them. Like, so Tiger Beat had a deal with the Monkees TV show, and this became kind of your daily life. You're working with the Monkees and gathering this information so you can write this column.
Yes. And it was a lot of information we had to gather. Yeah. It turned out to be a lot, and a lot of pictures too. So I did go out to Screen Gems, and immediately Davy Jones spotted me, and he came over, and I introduced myself, and he goes, well, let me show you around the set. And I mean, he was that casual, that carefree, that easygoing. I always kind of had butterflies in my stomach. Here I am on the Monkey set. Come on. It was a big deal. And yet he just put me at ease immediately. So then after that, it would become routine that I would go out once a week. I had them sign autographs constantly because we'd put their autograph at the end of their Monkey Talk column. We'd put Love Davy on the color pictures and so on. Our artists needed that Sharpie on white paper. So between shots, maybe one or two of them were working and one or two weren't. Like I'd go into Peter's dressing room and we'd sit and talk for a half an hour, an hour, or whoever. Now, Mickey kind of reluctantly would go through that. It's like Mickey was just the type of person, he wanted to be on all the time. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be making people laugh. Mm-hmm. If you were just sitting around talking, he'd be the clown. He'd be the one who would make everybody laugh. And he knew he had to do this, and he would be, you know, he'd be serious with me, and it just kind of like, okay, let's just do what we have to do and get it over with. Whereas Davy and Peter were just, it was almost like they were enjoying the process, you know? And then there was Michael. And Michael was always very reluctant. I remember at one time he said, you know, I'm so many years old. I have a wife. I really don't care about this teeny bopper stuff. And I said, yes, but, you know, they care about you. So this is, you know, this is for the fans. So he would cooperate to a degree. But I remember one time I went and I said, I'd like to do a serious interview, you know. He basically said, well, I'll do an interview if you'll, and the word he actually used was balmy.
Balmy?
You know,
oh my God.
Yes, like, good golly, Miss Molly, she sure likes to ball. And that was the word he used, but I think I used the F word in, because, you know, that's what he meant.
That's more impactful.
And I, at the time, I'm pretty sure I just fluffed it off like, oh, you can't be serious. You know, Michael, let's just get this done. But that became my attitude with him, was just, Michael, just suck it up. Let's get it done. I know you don't like this. And then it wasn't too long before he just finally said to me, I don't like doing this stuff. Why don't you talk to my wife, Phyllis? And I said, that works for me. And so, you know, I met Phyllis. We started going to lunches. And I, of course, I would record our whole conversation. So it was like, how Phyllis met Michael, what's their home life like, what's Christmas like. It was like we got into all kinds of subjects, and she was just the nicest woman and such a pleasure to be with. And in a way, we became friends. She knew I was not out to write anything bad about them.
Because that's not what Tiger Beat did. Tiger Beat was promoting
people. No, absolutely not.
You weren't a tell-all. You weren't trying to get dirt at all. You were just trying to get fun facts for the readers.
You just wanted all the
Exactly.
Yeah, all the stats, basically.
And so those times with her ended up to just be a pure joy for me.
I just want to remind our listeners, how old are you at this time? Are you like 20 when you're experiencing this?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Gosh. Because when I started at Tiger Beat in 66, I was 19.
Okay. A kid. Still yeah. a kid.
Thinking of you having that dialogue with him, with Michael, and being like, no. And you were very mature, it seems like, for a 20-year-old.
Yeah. So you were able to make relationships with these people who were older than you, and they trusted you and confided in you.
Hello, listeners. If you've been listening for the past few months, you know that I've been experimenting with a new clothing rental membership from Armoire. After the pandemic, I fell into the routine of pretty much not getting dressed at all, ever. I basically had nighttime pajamas and daytime pajamas, and it was a habit that was so hard to break when it was time to start leaving our houses again. Was I comfortable? Yes. But did I look like me? Not really. That's where I thought Armoire might be helpful for me. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. My membership has helped me build a better wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and look a lot more like me than my pajamas did. Is comfort still a priority? 100%. That's one of the things I'm learning as I experiment with new styles. There are clothes out there that feel like pajamas, but I still look like I got dressed in the morning. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS, to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Recently, I was visiting Michelle in Denver, and you guys, I was so impressed how seriously she takes the meals that she makes for her new dog.
It's true. Yeah. Our pup, Frankie, is a 2-year-old Australian cattle dog, mixed rescue. And since I imagine she probably ate nothing but weeds on the farm she came from, I want to give her the best and tastiest nutrition possible. And that's why I feel so good about giving Frankie Badlands Ranch. Actress Katherine Heigl, she's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation. She says she's seeing more issues with dogs' health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health, their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs, and it's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And bonus, Badlands Ranch also supports the Jason DeBus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes, just like Frankie. And I'm here to tell you, Frankie loves it and gets so excited when she sees me reach for the bag.
We have a great offer that we are excited to share with all of our dog parent listeners. Go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS today.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle, and I want to talk to you about my post-menopause symptoms. TMI? Not with this audience. Listen, for what seems like 92 years, I've been waking up in the night with a wet pajama top. I know a lot of you know that feeling. I've experienced mood swings, bloating, racing thoughts. Basically, I've felt like I'm living in a body that's not mine. But I'm so happy to report that all of that is changing since I started taking Hormone Harmony. I've noticed a huge improvement in all of those things I just listed. And you guys, I've even weaned off the hormone patches I've worn for the past 6 years. And I'm not the only one who's loving it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And there are over 17,000 reviews where women mention that Hormone Harmony has helped them feel like themselves again. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens.
Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today. Don't you want to feel like yourself again?
I actually have, so I have a collection of Tiger Beat magazines from 1968. A friend very graciously gave me this collection for my 50th birthday.
That's fabulous.
Your name is, your handprints, your fingerprints are all over these magazines. It's all the monkeys. I can see how much time you spent with the monkeys because it's on every single cover. Yep. And there's a lot about people's houses too. And there's one headline here that says, Peter invites you to his home. But there is one story that I want you to tell about going to Peter's home that where you didn't get exactly what you expected.
Oh, okay.
You got more.
Yeah. Yes. That's right.
Well, it was after Peter left the monkeys because he was the first to leave. He had bought a house in the valley when the first, you know, house picture was of his Hollywood bachelor pad. And it was actually, at the time, it was right up the street for me below the Hollywood sign. And he had a, you know, it was just a two-level house. You know, you walked in on the first level and it was all glass. So you had views of, you know, the smog. And then, then underneath that were the bedrooms. But after he left the monkeys, you know, he had bought a house in the San Fernando Valley. It had a pool. It was like a regular home. Definitely not a Stars mansion, because he had to give up a lot to leave the monkeys. And so I went to the door and he opened the door and he was in the nude. And he just said, oh, our house is clothing optional. Do you, you know, would you like to join us? And I said, I'm fine the way I am. Thank you very much. Tried to look him in the eye, not anywhere else.
And everybody's naked, right? Everybody in the house is
naked. I think they were, yes. I was going to say some were, some weren't, but they pretty much were. There were only about four or five people in the house that day. And some were swimming in the pool, you know, so they'd dive off the diving board and whatever.
Oh, my goodness. I think this is tracking, though, with how I imagine the times were then, right? Like the hippie time and people
totally.
Are very free, very open. So maybe today, if I went to someone's house, like if you went to a celebrity's house and they opened it naked and said clothing optional, you might be like, oh, that's different.
I'm going to call the police.
I'm feeling like maybe back then it was more like, all right, that's kind of what's happening now.
Well, what's interesting is I had written an obituary when Peter passed for, I think it was CNN. And the woman who called me that was the editor of that section or whatever, and she read my story and she said, now, did you feel like that was sexual abuse when he opened the door naked? And it was like, not in a million years. Mm-hmm. It was free love in the park. It was, Haight Ashbury put a flower in your hair. And while I never went naked at a love-in, it didn't shock me as she would have imagined. Like you said, it's like, this is the way things are at this moment. Yeah. And she had a hard time understanding that because it's like, oh no, this would not fly today. And I didn't think a thing about it. And of course, Peter acted exactly the same as he would have, you know, in his dressing room.
Yes. In his monkey shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
Peter acts the same as clothed Peter.
Yes, right.
So it was hard to like shock me at the time, just because I was aware of all the things happening in the world.
Love is understanding. It's in everything we do. this, you had so many great relationships with people because, and part of that is because you, Tiger Beat, had arrangements with these different TV shows. Another one of those TV shows was Here Come the Brides, starring Bobby Sherman, who I in retrospect, it's only now as a 56-year-old woman where I fully understand how beautiful Bobby Sherman is.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful man.
He was so cute in that show, and that he had a stutter. Just, you know, you couldn't help but love him.
And he actually wrote the foreword for your book.
He did. He did. He was such a down-to-earth, unfazed by the Hollywood hoopla, and he had a monthly column where he writes to you. But then, to your point, when the Partridge Family came along, again, because of our work with the Monkees, Screen Gems contacted him. It was the same kind of situation going out there as on the Monkee set.
So you spent a lot of time on that set of the Partridge Family.
Yes.
But it sounds like it was mostly David Cassidy and Susan Day that were going to be Tiger Beat material.
Yes, yes. And the thing was, though, he also offered contracted for Tiger Beat's official Partridge Family magazine.
Oh, they got their own magazine too.
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay. Yeah. It went on for, at least a couple of years.
When you met David Cassidy and saw what was happening, could you predict his meteoric rise? Could you see that that was going to come?
Yes, because by that time, I was older. Mm-hmm. I was looking at Tiger Beat from an entrepreneurial point of view as much as my excitement and giddiness of being, you know, a new writer for Tiger Beat. By this point, I was thinking about the business too. And I'd just come to learn, whether it was through osmosis or whatever, of what appealed to our readers. And I just felt duty bound to give the readers what they were craving. And, you know, that's why I so often had my picture taken with them. We wanted to show them we're in Hollywood. We do go out to the set every week.
And then those pictures of you would be in Tiger Beat. You're like, here I am talking to David Cassidy. Like,
exactly.
This is real.
Yeah. It was validating that we were the magazine that was in Hollywood because 16 was in New York City. And I mean, they all go there occasionally, but we're with them every day, basically, was the,
literally, yeah,
what we were trying to get across to the reader. So it gave us that authentic stamp. And it was true. We really did spend a lot of time.
Can you tell us about the giveaway with the puppies?
Oh,
This contest. There's a Tiger Beat contest that is just the best story ever, because it's not only so Tiger Beat, it also shows David Cassidy in a very interesting light. This is fascinating.
Well, I was over at his house because Sam Hyman, his roommate, he wrote a column like living with David. And we paid him for that. It's not like it was contracted through Screen Gems because it was his roommate. And I was over at their house and David said, oh, these puppies, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going on tour and I don't know what I'm going to do with them.
Was it his dog?
Yes, it was okay. His and Sam's dog. It was the dog Sam, I think was David's, and Sheesh, which was short for hashish, but we didn't we didn't print that at the time. And that was Sam's dog. So their two dogs made it.
Oh, God.
And
spay and neuter your puppies.
Yeah, no kidding. So they had all these little cute puppies. And he said, I just don't know what I'm going to do. And it wasn't like he could put an ad in the paper and, you know, you know, come over and pick up one of David Cassidy's excess puppies, you know. So I said, David, what if we have a contest? I'll see that they're taken care of and well taken care of, because by that time they were at least 6 weeks old. So they were weaned from their mom. And so I took them. I asked my mom, you know, will you watch these puppies? Because we had a fenced backyard in Anaheim. So she put up with those puppies for like 2 months, because it took a month to get the contest out on the newsstands. Then it took a month to get all the entries back in. And then David helped choose who would get the puppies. So the five were chosen. And then I had to get kennels for them all. And then I had to put them in the kennel, take them to the airport. And I mean, I cried every time I dropped one off.
Got on a silver plane and flew away. Chased all my rainbows to the end. I wish I knew then what I know today. I'm on my way back home again. Love, that's what's waiting for me. That's where I've got to be. Just to look in your eyes, feel your lips touch mine.
And I mean, anything that's going to boost Tiger Beat sales, you know, I mean.
Well, it all right. The contests did. I mean, even by the time we all were readers, oh my gosh, when, you know, Leif Garrett's teddy bear, Sean Cassidy's teddy bear, whatever. And another one that you mention in the book that just cracks me up, the locks of Donny Osmond's hair. Yes. He was going to get a haircut. Yes. So you're like, why not? Hey, I bet we can make a lot of money on that hair on the floor. Like, clever. Were you guys just thinking of these all the time?
And we did not sell those, by the way. That was a contest where you could win.
Yes, right.
I had gone to the photo shoot for Donny getting a haircut. You know, Mrs. Osmond was always with them. Or Mr. Osmond, but almost always it was Mrs. Osmond. So I asked her, I said, would it be okay if we got some of the things and give it, you know, to our readers in a contest to win a lock of Donnie's hair?
And it's like hair that's dropped on the floor, right? It's not like, let's carefully cut some hair off of his head. It's like, let me sweep this up from his haircut.
That's exactly what we did. In fact, there's a picture of Donnie and I gathering it and putting it in a plastic bag in that article. And so she said, yeah, that would be fine.
I can't believe she said yes, instead of like, gross.
Well, she was really okay with me because Gloria Stavers of 16 had printed a picture. She had done a photo shoot with Donny and she had him take off his shirt and she ran that picture.
Oh, no.
But I also respected the modesty that they believed in. And she came to trust me implicitly after that. And
So she's like hair that's already on the floor, no big deal.
Oh, right.
And like you said earlier, you weren't selling the hair, but knowing that you could use this as a contest certainly had to put dollar signs in your eyes for the magazine, which like you said before, like now you're understanding the entrepreneurial part of it. And that's always going to be good for Tiger Beat, right? To say, win a lock of Donnie's hair is going to sell more magazines.
At that point in time, I wasn't really thinking about selling the magazine. It was making it the best for the readers.
To ask you about is, I think, one of the most exciting but heartbreaking reveals in your book. I cannot believe I've never heard this before. I can't believe you've been sitting on this for 55 years. And there's a line in your book that introduces it just perfectly. About this story, you say, as I stood next to the stage, it occurred to me that I was living the fantasy that I wrote about for all the young girls who read Tiger Beat. I'm talking here about a relationship that you had that came about while you were working in the field for Tiger Beat. And it sounds like it was, even to this day, one of the most important of your whole life.
It was my first real love affair. It was significant. And it's funny because I'm a romance book reader, and I know that half the books say, okay, our fingers touched and it was electric. I had never had that experience until I had gone to the hotel to do an interview with the Bee Gees.
All of our listeners just went, Okay.
We still don't
here
know
we go.
Yet.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah.
And so they were in town and I went over to the hotel and of course, Robert Stigwood was their manager. And he said, why don't you guys go out on the patio? So there's enough room for the five of us. And literally you can see it in the, there's a black and white picture of us sitting on, but the way Morris is looking at me and something just sparked between us. And it was just amazing. I mean, certainly it didn't interrupt the interview. We kept going and everything. But in my mind, I'm just going, this has never happened to me. You know, what is this feeling? And then, of course, they had to go do a TV rehearsal. And so I'm walking out of the hotel with them. And Morris says, well, walk with me. So we were pretty much by ourselves. And he said, oh, my God, that's the greatest necklace. You know, where did you get this? And I said, well, I made it. And it was an Indian beaded necklace. It was so popular then, you know, and I was making them on the little looms. And he said, oh, my God, I'd love one of those. And I said, well, I'd be happy to make you one. Write down your address and I'll send it to you. So I didn't even go back to work at Tiger Beat that way. I went straight to the hobby shop. I chose the colors that I was going to make it out of. And I started that night. It was like, oh, man, I did send it off to him. And then I didn't hear anything. I didn't get a note or anything. But then one morning, it was like 5 a.m., totally dark outside. You know, I'm sound asleep. And my phone at home rings. And it's Morris calling from London on a transatlantic phone call. I mean, even Tiger Beat didn't spend money on transatlantic phone calls ever. Never, ever. And I mean, I about fell out of bed. I was just so shocked that this was happening to me. And then he proceeded to call me. And about the third time he called, he said, I would love it if you'd come and stay with me, you know, in London with my family. And I said, well, I would love to do that. I said, I have to check with my editor, you know. And
again, I thought you were saying check with my mom.
And so he said, of course you can go. So I bought my plane ticket. We had not established where I was going to be staying. I mean, I never asked him. He just said, can you come to London? And so I was supposed to arrive at 6:30 in the morning. Well, it was 9:30 their time, and it was supposed to be 6:30. It's not like I could text him and say, I'm going to be late. Right. I mean, there's literally no way to contact him. But someone came on the plane from the airline and said, I'm looking for Ann Moses. And I said, well, I'm Ann Moses. And he said, please follow me. And he takes me, gets my luggage, and then takes me through customs. And then there at right as I walk out of customs is Morris standing there, just looking like a dream in one of his velvet jackets. And that wasn't the half of it. When we walked outside, he had brought John Lennon's Rolls Royce to pick me up. And I'm climbing into the back of a Rolls Royce Princess. And I'm riding in the back of a limousine with Morris, you know, and he's holding my hand. And I mean, we'd never been on a date, but it was so casual and just seemed like as natural as it could be. So then we're going to his house north of London in a little subdivision. He was living with his parents.
Was he the same age as you or older?
It turns out he was 17 at the time.
Oh, wait, oh, my God.
Wow. Oh, okay, we can't put that in. Good information.
But, I mean, it appalls me today because I think I would have gotten arrested. But, yeah, I mean, he was so much more mature than I was because of the life he had led up to that point. Sure. It never crossed my mind, I don't think, until I was writing the book and I had to look at specific dates and I went, oh, my goodness, robbing the cradle.
So he's still living with his parents. Obviously, he's only 17 years old. So you go home to his parents' house.
So then we went home He introduced me to his folks. His grandma lived with them, and she was not very cogent. And of course, Andy Gibb, he was there, and he was this little tot. And we would give him a quarter to go down to the candy store so he'd leave us alone. That's for real. He would save Barry's bathwater. How he'd get it, I don't know, because Barry wasn't living there, but he was selling Barry's bathwater.
Oh my gosh.
Brilliant.
Like bring it to school. Who wants my brother's bathwater?
Oh my God.
That was such a crack up.
Talk about entrepreneurial.
No kidding. Yeah. You go on and tell us the entire love affair in this book. And I really want readers to read it because it is just like out of the romance books that you read. Beautiful, beautiful story. But I do have to warn people because it's a tragic, tragic ending because basically the two of you are you're having this love affair and you think that you and Morris are going to be together forever until one day he's in your bed and he breaks some news to you.
He does. It was the night before my 21st birthday. So we had gone to a party. Lee Hazelwood, you know, who produced Nancy Sinatra, These Boots Are Made for Walking. He was a record producer. He had a party at his house, and the Bee Gees were all invited. They had flown into town to do the Smothers Brothers comedy hour. And so they were rehearsing all week. And so we went to this party, and there's this fabulous picture of Morris looking at me at the party. And I mean, it was, when you look at it, it was everything I felt that we had together. But we get home as we had done the rest of the week, because he stayed with me the whole week at my house in Hollywood. I had a little house that was down lower than Peter's house below the Hollywood side. And he stayed with me instead of staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel with the rest of the group. And so, you know, we had spent every evening doing what couples in love do. And as we did that night when we got home from the party. So this was after midnight. So technically, it was on my 21st birthday. Oh. And he told me, you know, after we'd made love, he goes, oh, there's something I have to tell you. I'm married to Lulu.
God.
And I just...
That bitch.
Dagger.
You got it right. I mean, I don't think I spoke, you know?
He's what, 18?
He's 18 years old.
Yes. Yeah. And it turns out, I would find out a couple of weeks later that he was not married to her. And they did, in fact, get married, you know, a year later or something. And I also found out years and years later that he had been forced to break up with me by Robert Stigwood. Because Robert Stigwood, he wanted that celebrity matchup to be like a super couple. And I didn't fit that mold. So it was heartbreaking. And you know, years later, I mean, ever since then, it was like, in my mind, I would go, did I embellish what we had? Did I, you know, have I made it bigger than it really was over the years? But then my mom was 93, and she sent me a box, and in this box were all the letters I had written them from London.
Oh my God.
And of course, I print some of those in the book because it validated everything that I had in my mind. I wrote them from Paris, and I said, Morris is in Germany, you know, performing. Morris said to tell you he loves me, and, you know, he's coming to see me soon, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so it was really a revelation. And it was after that that someone that I used to know in the Tiger Beat days, she was working for the publicist that was doing the publicity for the Bee Gees. And she was the one who told me what actually went down. And I mean, it was just like the final chapter, because obviously all these years later, I don't hate him. I couldn't have any bad feelings because of the experiences I had with him. Yeah. And our very brief but intense relationship. And I mean, I could see that that would not have been the life I would have wanted. I would not want to have been a superstar's wife in any way, shape, and form. And you know, and then he, you know, when he got into alcoholism and such, I mean, all I felt was sad for him.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was so happy that he finally found somebody to love, had two kids, and even though his death was tragic, he had those wonderful years with people who loved him and vice versa. So I have zero regrets. And I decided I'm having a new start. I'm moving to Salt Lake. It was so much more of a slower pace of life than Southern California. And I upped and did it. And of course, it would be only a matter of months before I would have, you know, just by happenstance, meet the man who would become my husband. And we've been married for 44 years now.
And
have two amazing young men that we raised. And I mean, that's why I wouldn't change one iota of anything that happened to me.
I've got to say, your whole story from the first pages of your book, the serendipitous timing of so many things in your life, just being somewhere at a certain time, the way the stars aligned. I mean, I don't know what you believe in, but I've got to believe the universe knew exactly what it was doing.
Well, there was someone looking after me. I'll tell you that much.
110%.
Oh my goodness. And this has been such a delight. We could keep chatting to you for hours, but thank you so much for being here and for talking with us and sharing these stories. You guys, can you believe we're in the same group as like Davy Jones and David Cassidy?
6 degrees.
The
Gift. No, like Elvis 2 degrees. Press. 2 degrees right. From Elvis. I'm 2 degrees from Davy Jones.
It is insane. Right. To wrap it up today, could you give us a Tiger Beat headline in true Ann Moses Tiger Beat fashion that sums up how this job affected your life?
The day that changed Dan's life.
Oh, you guys. Wow. I feel like even now I need to take some deep breaths after hearing Anne share her story about her relationship with Morris Gibb. I mean, people. We have visions of not only John Lennon's Bentley, but a little Andy Gibb selling Barry's bathwater.
Yes. I know.
Just I amazing. Know.
I still, when I remember the first time I read the story with Morris, I like kind of like want to hide my eyes, like, no, who, what?
Yeah,
and then you see it. And like, it was just like, I had so many emotions going through my body at the same time. It's a great story.
And the way she tells it too is so kind and tender. Right?
Yes.
It really is her romance to own. And it makes me happy for her, and it makes me happy for him.
Yes. Yeah, I thought it was told with so much respect for the relationship they had and the love they shared. And, you know, regardless of how you feel about this, the circumstances surrounding it, I feel like she still looks back on that kindly.
Stupid Stiggy. Makes me so mad.
Mm. But as she's kind of pointed out, it all worked out.
It all worked out.
It was supposed to.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to have that romance in her past. She was supposed to have that romance to look back fondly on. And yeah, it's just a beautiful thing. And I have a little surprise for you guys, because I, as I just said at the top of the episode, I have a stack of Tiger Beat magazines from 1968. It was a gift from my friend Colleen, who on my 50th birthday gave me all the issues of Tiger Beat from my birth year, which was such an amazing gift. So they're all from 1968. So, and this is prime Ann Moses time. So today, before we recorded, I just decided to look through and see Ann Moses in my pages and just examine it a little bit. And lo and behold, I come upon her column meow. And here we have, there's her column right there.
So, and she's so cute, you guys. She's so really, like really that cute. Girl.
She's yeah. so groovy. And I start to read her column and she says, "Oh, what a great, gassy, groovy, pop-filled month this has been. Before the Bee Gees left Hollywood, Lee Hazlewood gave a party in their honor at his beautiful Spanish home in the Valley. Everyone in town seemed to appear at one time or another during the evening to congratulate the Bee Gees on their great show the week before." She's writing an article after the night when Morris told her he was married to Lulu. And that photo, she talks about, "Oh, there was this photo of him, of us at the party where he's looking at me so sweetly." Here's the photo.
Yeah.
And we'll put this in the weekly reader, you guys. He is just looking at her with pure adoration.
Look how young he looks. Oh,
he was so cute, too.
He was adorable.
I think that photo's in the book, too, in Meow.
Oh, it might be. Yeah.
I think it is. But wow, talk about being committed to your job and your
professional.
Right. That she had to have still been hurting so much right then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, he's looking at her. That is pure adoration.
I know.
He basically got cartoon hearts as his eyes.
Right.
Don't
it's
you
teen
think
love.
In that picture?
It is so teen love, right? And it's the thing that everybody dreams about. It's the thing that all the Tiger Beat readers dream about, that teen love. And you know what? Teen love doesn't last, people, but it sure is fun.
That's right. Many, many, many thanks to Anne for sharing all of her stories and particularly trusting us with that Morris Gibb one.
Mm-hmm.
So great. And you know what? Also, Anne, we want to thank you for being a trailblazer, for stepping into a male-dominated field at such a young age, and for standing up for your readers. That had to take guts. And one of the biggest takeaways I had after talking to Anne was how important it was to her to share the information that readers really wanted to know and to deliver it to them in clever, creative ways. I feel like that we have Anne to thank for learning that purple was Donnie's favorite color and that he loved her chili recipe. Because she knew what we wanted to learn and to know, and she fought for that for us. And we are so grateful, Anne.
Thank you, Anne Moses. We'd also like to thank all of you for listening today. Tiger Beat is seriously one of the reasons we remember our childhood so fondly, which is the whole reason we have all found each other. We appreciate you going on this ride with us, and we hope you got as much out of our conversation today as we did.
And we also want to give a very special thank you to our Patreon members who take their support of this podcast to the next level and get totally awesome bonus content in return, like free admission into our quarterly book clubs, our occasional book clubs, I should say. We honestly could not do any of this without them. And today we're giving a special thank you to Johanna, Leanne, Deb, Kimberly, Robert, Emily, Mindel, Julie, Megan, Sharon, Felicia, Carmi, Alexis, Sheila, Jennifer, Pam, Natalie, and Diane.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the jiggliest show on TV, Three's Company. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everyone.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.